broadcasting from the Unshackled Studios in Melbourne. This is Wilmsfront, brought to you by theunshackled.net. Now here's Tim Wilms.
Hello everyone and welcome to tonight's show. The date is Wednesday, the 18th of March 2020. It is 9:05 PM here in Melbourne. We are live on the Tim Wilms YouTube and DLive channel. Apologies for yet another programming change. I know that Uncuckables didn't air last night as normally does on a Tuesday, but it will be in its traditional Thursday night slot tomorrow. And I'll use the excuse that these are unprecedented times. I did a swap with Diabelle Tran. A lot of you have just come from her weekly live stream with Dougal Cameron of Carnage House Productions. Those who are watching this live and on replay will notice that I've got new glasses. You can see my eyes better with these new ones. I picked them up today along with a dermatologist appointment so that the rest of my face will look just as good. Thankfully, I got no bad news from that appointment, though he did recommend in the short term, if I'm doing on-camera work, maybe touch myself up with some cosmetics. So I must get myself a hair and makeup assistant because, well, I can never get, as you know, I can never get this hair right here as well. But on with the show. Now, before I bring on my featured guest, I want to give an update on the coronavirus pandemic in Australia. It is continuing to change life as we have known it. The inevitable economic downturn, stock market crash, recession that many of us had predicted is now here, accelerated by the pandemic. PCLX Pete asks, was it Specsavers? No, it wasn't. It was from Vision One. That was where I got the glasses from. Now, today, Prime Minister Scott Morrison, at a press conference in Canberra at 9 PM Melbourne time, announced that indoor gatherings would now be restricted to 100 people. Outdoor gatherings are still restricted to 500 people, as well as sports being played at empty stadiums. I know that the AFL is having last-minute discussions about whether the season opener between Richmond and Carlton will take place tomorrow night at the empty MCG. I haven't got a news alert about it, but no AFL player has been diagnosed with coronavirus. There have been a few scares, but the Super Rugby, that has been, since it's a transnational competition, that has been fully cancelled. The Premier League's been suspended, so has European Champions League, and the Euro 2020 has been postponed until 2021. In Australia, schools are to remain open, though some private schools are shutting and parents are withdrawing their children from schools of their own decision. PCLX Peter said, it's going ahead, AFL. That's good to hear. It'll be quite surreal watching the game with no spectators inside, but these are the times that we live in. Now, I don't believe that they should close the schools, because I believe that will cause more harm than good, because the children are going to be around. A lot of them might not stay at home with their parents. They might be out and about in the community and could infect others. Children are not going to die from the coronavirus. In China, there was no child under 10 that died from the coronavirus. Well, that's what they told us. Now, to protect the elderly in aged care facilities, visitors are restricted to two per day per resident. Australians are now not urged not to travel abroad. And all Australians who are currently overseas are urged to get home immediately. I just think that there should be a complete border shutdown. And if you're stranded elsewhere, too bad. If you've got some business conference to go to overseas, then too bad. Virgin has grounded its entire international fleet. Qantas has reduced its international flights by 90%. The supermarket shelves have remained largely empty. We now have meat, milk, frozen vegetables, and even fresh potatoes now going out the door. More purchasing limits now apply. Occurring as we speak, the supermarkets are have closed early, and the restocking marathon is taking place. Pensioner hour today at the supermarkets from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. went better today than they did yesterday, with more of them being able to get toilet paper and other essentials, a few more happy customers, which is what we like. Now, obviously, the supermarkets are doing a roaring trade. Coles, they've advertised 5,000 new positions, casual positions, but just today they got 36,000 applicants. And I mentioned that travel, tourism, major events, a lot of those business, not just the business downturn, but casuals are not going to get work. And so even though the supermarkets need more workers, it doesn't seem like there's enough jobs to go around. Cafes are now nearly empty as well. They're the next casualty of these containment measures. While I was on the road this morning attending my various appointments, I did notice that there were all the roadworks were continuing. They're still planning. There's still the signs up saying night works taking place on this road and that road. And I see all the Hi-Vis shirts there pouring whatever it is they do into roads. And that I still have to slow down to 40 where there's roadworks. So that is all still taking place. Now, while giving his press conference this morning, Scott Morrison condemned the shopping hoarders and those abusing supermarket staff as un-Australian. He said it's not on, it's got to stop. He gave us a bit of a telling off, but I think a lot of Australians would agree with him. His government is working on a second stimulus package, which is due to be announced on Sunday. Lots of businesses are asking for bailouts, halts on loan repayments, tax relief. Parliament still has to sit to pass these stimulus measures. Both parties have agreed for the next sitting week, which starts Monday, to have a slimmed down parliament of 90 MPs, since we now have four politicians who now have coronavirus. We have Peter Dutton, we have Senator Andrew Bragg, we have National Senator Susan MacDonald, and I've forgotten the fourth one. Those are the three names that three major names there. Social distancing is being encouraged. Handshakes are being discouraged, and we're all being told up to step up our personal hygiene, wash hands regularly. There's not much hand sanitizer going around, but if you've got some, keep it in your backpack or handbag or whatever. And if you're in a dirty area, make sure you give your hands a bit of a spray there. The European Union is now in lockdown. The national borders between the member states are shut. Who would have dreamed of this day? And obviously, Italy is where the death toll is continuing to rise there. I've now seen footage of warehouses of coffins of the dead, which is pretty horrific. I do believe that their death rate will rise above China, which is pretty alarming. And Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and New Zealand's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, the globalist leaders, or the leaders that the globalists love the most, they've shut their borders. And I saw Faith Goldie take a caption of Justin Trudeau announcing that Canada was banning foreigners, saying that she had to pinch herself. And I've repeatedly said that nationalism is the cure to this. If there was a bit more nationalism and controlled migration, maybe this outbreak wouldn't have happened. This pandemic would have occurred. Hopefully there's a bit of once this pandemic is under control, there's a bit of revision about such free-flowing movement of people to prevent something like this happening again. But let's have a look at the current infection count as of right now. So I'll bring it up on the screen here. So China life is actually now returning to normal. Their lockdowns are being eased. Economic activity is being returned to normal. Only 13 more cases, 3,237 deaths. But look at Italy, only 700 behind now. Total cases per 1 million, 521. And you look at China, only 56, and you see the cases in Spain, Germany, France, they're all rising there. And look at the death toll rising in Spain. Germany has got theirs relatively low. France is rising. US is now up to 6,000 cases there. And if we go down to Australia here, we have got 565 cases, 110 new today, and we had one further death. I know that I said that there was a new death on Monday. That was incorrect information according to this graph. It was an error, but it's all over the news today that another elderly Australian has lost their life due to coronavirus, taking the total until six there. Now, Facebook and YouTube, they're removing posts and videos even in a more ferocious manner in the wake of fake news circulating online. Manual reviews are being reduced, so they have strengthened their automatic algorithms. So a lot of people are finding that their Facebook posts about the coronavirus being removed for things such as spam or false news or misleading information. Most of the fake news about a pending national lockdown, government officials have said, is rubbish. There's also doctored government documents that are being circulated on social media, which are being reported to the police. My advice to you is, well, I was forced off Facebook, but I would recommend to the rest of you, get off social media. I know that the mainstream media wants you to turn to them for information, but they too are enjoying scaring you about this national emergency. I made my analysis on Monday's Wilms Front about how these containment measures are being made to safeguard our health system, maintain public order, and minimize economic disruption by acting early to contain early, and so life can turn back to normal quicker, though we are being told that this situation, these containment measures could last at least 6 months. Many people are self-isolating to protect themselves and others, not simply those given public health orders. But what should be done about Australia's most important type of mass gathering, which is, of course, our election days? Local government elections are still taking place in Queensland on Saturday, 28th of March, for 77 local council areas. The voting process for local government elections varies throughout Australia, but in Queensland, in 58 of those council jurisdictions, voting is conducted via compulsory polling booth attendance, just like in state and federal elections. The Electoral Commission of Queensland is encouraging the elderly to apply for postal votes. They are extending early hours voting. Hand sanitizer is being widely distributed to polling places, and they're changing pencils regularly at the polling centres and encouraging you to bring your own pen. Now, a familiar face to the audience of this show. Hello, Paul.
Yes.
So a familiar name to the audience of this show is Paul Taylor, who ran as Fraser Anning's running mate in the Queensland Senate during the 2019 federal election. He's now running for the position of mayor in the city of Logan, which is in the southwest of Brisbane. We delayed the show that he could prioritize his campaigning activities. We couldn't get the Skype working, so I've just got this, if I bring it up here, this photo of Paul here, his official campaign portrait. So Paul, I'm glad you've been able to join us tonight.
Thank you for inviting me, and good evening, listeners.
Now, obviously, you didn't expect to be campaigning under these circumstances, but still, let's start with the election and the campaign itself. You were obviously, as I just said, a Senate candidate for Fraser Anning's party less than a year ago, which would have been an incredibly draining experience, but you're already back on the campaign horse. So my first question is to you, why is it important to run for office again and for this position in particular?
Well, I had no intention of running for mayor of the city of Logan, but a guy who heads up a peak body in Logan approached me and we were having a conversation. He said, well, why didn't you run? I said, me? And he said, yes. I said, there's no way in the world I'd run for mayor of Logan. I've known quite a few mayors, a number of councillors, and most of them, the only box that most of them tick is that for a dipstick. I said, none of these people would survive in the corporate, the pressure cooker corporate environment that I came out of Coles when I was a national executive with them, a senior executive. And he said, Matt, that's exactly what we need here. We need someone with the corporate skills, the background, and your business skills as well, because Logan is a business and these politicians have screwed the place up.
Because the city of Logan has been in the national news for all the wrong reasons in the past couple of years.
Yep, and it's only because of the poor leadership of the council. We've had career politician after career politician step in there. And Logan is, the location of Logan is something that is very powerful. It's located between Brisbane and the Gold Coast. And when I speak at various events, I often cite this as a powerful analogy. You know, Australia does $1 billion trade with India. Between Australia and India is Singapore. And Singapore is milking the trades from both sides of the spectrum. Logan is located between Brisbane and the Gold Coast. The only thing that Logan gets from people from the Gold Coast when they're going on to Brisbane to do some work or do some business, the closest that Logan gets to it is a drop-off of Smugglers. And it's the same thing with Brisbane. And so I've elevated this at my various speeches and said, why is this happening? Why is it so dump that it is? We've not had leadership and we've not had business people who have not got a clue how to optimize on Logan's location.
Because I'll bring up this map here of the city of Logan, so our audience will better understand here. For those who are watching on YouTube, you can see where Logan is located there under the city of Brisbane and just above the city of the Gold Coast. And then directly below it is scenic rim there. And then there is Redlands Council to its east and then Ipswich to its west, which is the gateway to the Darling Downs. So you are absolutely right that it's in a very strategic position, especially with the urbanisation of the southeast of Queensland.
Absolutely. The location of Logan, it's a very strategic location. Well, what's happened here is this. So we were at the various mayoral forums, and at one of the forums, one of the other councillors who's standing for mayor, he's been a councillor for 22 years, and he made the statement, I don't know why people from Sydney don't invest in Logan. So I took the microphone off him when he finished, and I said, I'll tell you why. Because Logan, what has Logan got to offer? And someone from the audience answered and said, nothing. I said, absolutely. I said, well, we do have something to offer. We've got cheap housing and a touch of crime. I said, but outside of that, we have nothing to offer for the investment community. And then I unraveled. It was a lovely segue for me to bring out my sixth policy, which is to freeze rates and charges for the whole four-year term. I'm the only mayoral candidate with that policy. And it then gave me the platform to unravel my policy and explain to them, see, if we freeze rates and charges for 4 years, it then gives the mayor and the councillors a platform of economic stability, financial strength, to now actually sell the city of Logan to investors, to attract the investment into the city, because you've got Brisbane taking their rates up every year. They don't freeze their rates. Gold Coast doing what they do. But if we freeze our rates, it gives us it offers to business a stability that your rates are frozen, come and invest in Logan. But at the same time, I will also institute a series of efficiency measures, because I'm aware that a lot of savings could be got. We can work a lot smarter. So you have efficiency measures from the bottom pushing up, and you have the rates frozen to bring the investment in. And once the investment starts coming in because of the stability with rates being frozen, with investment comes employment. And with employment, as more people begin to work, crime begins to fall. And once the crime begins to fall, the morale of the city begins to lift and house prices start rising again. Now, that is exactly how Singapore was built in the 60s. That's why I often use Singapore as a very powerful metaphor or analogy, because in the 60s, Singapore was a financial swamp. But under the leadership of Lee Kuan Yew, iron-fisted and bloody-minded, it wasn't actually the magic of Lee Kuan Yew, it was basic, simple economics. How are you going to bring the investment in? What attraction have you got for them? He made it a duty-free state, and the investment poured in.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about Singapore there, and we just have to look now. They've successfully contained the coronavirus in their nation. But you talked about all the problems there with local government, and it doesn't matter whether they're Liberal or Labor. They love increasing the rates all the time to pay for all their largesse. Local government seems to be the forgotten level of government, and therefore it's the most unaccountable part of government. And a lot of the time, because I said in my introduction that local government elections are conducted differently throughout Australia. In Victoria, it's a postal ballot. We're given a list of the candidates, their faces, a brief bio. It doesn't really give the game away how they are really ideologically, who they're aligned with. And that's why you see a lot of green infiltration of these local councils, and they have restrictions on, things like land clearing, and there's delays in planning permits, just slowing everything down with red and in green tape. And meanwhile, they waste so much money on things that aren't the responsibility of local government.
Where's the media? What role is the media playing in that?
Well, they just focus on state and federal politics. I mean, when a local government makes a really abhorrent decision, there was one, I think, where Paul Murray on Sky News commented on how the New South Wales government, I believe, had to intervene in a local council to make sure that a town didn't get flooded because of heavy rains.
Well, the Lower City Council was one of the councils that was dismissed in Queensland. There were three councils dismissed: Logan, Ipswich, and Moreton. There is a lot of investigation. The mayor, I think, was dismissed over there, and quite a lot of things happening there. But Logan was dismissed for unprofessional conduct, and a lot of stuff going on. That's the reason why there's been such an interest for people to get involved in this particular level of democracy, because the mayor and all council, the whole council, was elected officials were dismissed. So we've got eight mayoral candidates standing for this position. Three or four of them are just blockers, really, and who are not very serious players in it, although they might say they are. But there you go, that's something else. But when it comes down to, about 3 months ago, I was interviewed by a journalist from the Jimboomba Times. The fellow's name is Jacob, and he rang me and we were having a conversation, and he went through my website, and out of all the candidates, I'm the only one with a very up-to-date, well-documented, policied website. And his exact words to me were, he says, "You're the only mayoral candidate with solid, sound economic policies for the city of Logan, and you're the only one with the ability to deliver this agenda."
I'll just show our audience on the screen your election flyer so they can just see it's very detailed. Here obviously mentions that you're a successful businessman. You now run your own business. You talk about, as you're there, your former executive roles with Coles. I wonder if have they called you back to deal with the current increase in demand and logistics?
Coles?
Yeah.
No, they wouldn't. They've got their own people. They're doing what they're doing. I've well and truly gone over them. I'm very consumed. I'm totally consumed in my own business. Totally consumed.
So we've got your policies here, which is reject mayor's salary increases, which, well, that'll be always popular. You've mentioned the freeze rates. Cameras at bus stops and community services. It's been on the national news, the crime spike in northern Queensland. Is it happening in Brisbane as well?
No, not in Brisbane. Logan has its share of it, but at the north of Queensland, that's a totally different setting up there as to what gets the stuff that gets on there, that goes on there. It's a different environment there, so you've got a different group of people who are getting up to what they do. And Logan, again, is quite different. As you know, the first ISIS terrorist in Australia came out of Logan.
Oh, wow.
The first ISIS terrorist from Australia came out of Logan.
And we've got your policy here on parks, the environment, and fire protection. Because, well, that should be a priority for local governments after the bushfire season. You've talked about your plan for boosting the local economy and jobs, minimise high-density buildings. That's always a tricky thing for any local government, because you obviously want economic activity there, but obviously local residents, there's a lot of as they're called, NIMBYs, not in my backyard.
Well, so the council has been, the previous council was in place. They took a hands-off role in it, because as you know, the state government releases the land, the state government sells and negotiates the deal with the developer. And the developer submits all the plans to the state government for what he's going to do, and then the council, Logan City Council, I understand, did absolutely nothing. They sat on the sidelines, watched everything take place, because while the community is going to get in arms with the government about the land clearing and these very tiny houses being on 300 square meter blocks of land, it's the council's role here is just to say, well, we have to do with this. This was all signed and delivered by the state government. So the local government blames the state government. But the local government is picking up all the rates and charges that will continue to flow from this project for forever. So the state government cops the flak, but the local government just picks up the revenue.
And that's how it is with a lot of layers of government. There's one level of government in Australia which gets the benefit, while the other has to deal with the consequences.
Has to live with the consequences of it. That's right. And so Logan's, the council's copying all the flack for it. And when the council turns around and says, well, this has got nothing to do with the council. This was actually authorized and signed and delivered by the state government. And people find that rather galling and difficult to take, because as far as they're concerned, well, you know, it's the council. But that's something, if I'm elected mayor, I'm committed to changing. But what we've got at the moment, we've got to live with what we've got. And we didn't have enough room on the fly to put it there, but one of my policies is to actually put out a million trees and to turn these concrete heat sinks into, you know, to have just flooded with trees. So we have this canopy of, I love trees. I'm not a greenie, but I just love trees. And if you have a stack of, you know, just flood the place with trees to grow all over the place, you could bring down the temperature in a place like that by about as much as 10%.
I certainly agree. You can love the environment and nature and not be a greenie, or should I say adherent to green ideology, which is actually anti-environmental, as it's been pointed out. It is
true. Oh, yes.
The fact that man has not played its role managing nature that has led to the bushfire season that we saw.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Greens are, they're the epitome of hypocrisy. What they actually meant to stand for, in reality, they actually the greatest danger to this nation's economy and to the environment.
Now, I mentioned Greens infiltrating local government, and the reason why a lot of them get elected is because a lot of local government elections, they don't have party affiliation. Now, I also mentioned that Queensland has what I call these super councils there. There was a council amalgamation process in 2007-2008, and well, City of Brisbane is in the news a lot, and that is very politically partisan. The mayoralship has been controlled by the Liberal Party for many years. Do you think that local government candidates should declare their party affiliation? And, well, as we've already stated, you stood for Fraser Anning's Conservative National Party last year, but obviously you're just running as Paul Taylor. Would you say you're a legitimate independent?
I'm an authentic independent because I resigned from the party in very early July. Now, I was in Fraser's party for a total of 2.5 months, and so I've been a lot more time out of the party than in the party. But a lot of mayoral candidates and candidates for Logan, because Logan is a non-party council, a local government, but, I mean, we all know who they are. They're all affiliated with their party. The ideology that they hold dear to them just shines through. They can't help themselves. And we know who they are. But they still feel very comfortable calling themselves independent when reality hits. But they're not. They're really not. And it's actually mainly the left of politics, mainly the left.
So would you support making that party affiliation is declared on the ballot box like it is in state and federal elections?
Well, they all declare that they're independent.
Yeah, but which is... Yeah, and of course we know that, well, you're a businessman. If you mislead your consumers, the ACCC, the Trade Practices Act, will come down on you. But in politics, you're allowed to mislead voters as much as you like.
You is it's got the sharpest it's the sharpest toothless tiger.
Now I'll move on to the coronavirus pandemic, how it's affected the campaign, because I said in my introduction that the Electoral Commission of Queensland, they are holding the election as intended, albeit they're going to make sure the voting centres are more hygienic, and they're encouraging more postal vote applications. There was, I think, 96,000 more postal vote applications with the Electoral Commission of Queensland. Obviously, a tradition of any campaign is that when you're out and about campaigning, you shake all the voters' hands, and there's also the other stereotype that you kiss babies as well. Obviously, we've got these new social distancing or rules or guidelines. So, how's that affected the sort of the person-to-person campaigning?
It's actually quite a disaster. It's a disaster. They can do, in order to change it and to make it very clinical, we actually need the state government to pass a law, because the ECQ knows, the ECQ is being flooded with complaints and suggestions, but they can do nothing, because this needs to be, the law needs to be passed by the state government. Just give you an example. When someone when someone comes in to vote at a polling station, and you've got four council divisions there, and in each division you've got about 7 or 8 candidates standing. You've got to also vote for the mayoral candidate, and the mayoral candidate has 8 mayoral standing. So before the voter actually enters the booth, they're being struck with at least 35 people waiting to hand them a hard-to-vote card.
Yeah, which is a tradition of Australian elections, and the hard-to-vote card, it's basically shoved in voters' faces, which it's just in this pandemic, it's just not... it's too dangerous to do that, risk of infection. And so you said that, as you said, the laws still exist as they are. Well, there's also the talk, how do parliaments meet if they've got to have social distancing? I mentioned there's going to be a reduced federal parliament next week. So they've got to meet to change the laws so that this the rules of this election can change so that it complies with the standards of the containment measures.
Well, this morning I was a journalist from the ABC rang me and asked me and said, as a mayoral candidate, do you think the election should be put off or put back? I said, definitely not. I said, we need a government, so we need to have it to go. I said, well, we've got the issue with man in the boots and the people in at the front. I said, well, it's very easy for them to get rid of this. All they need to do is, and this is exactly the scenario I put to the Election Commission, said, get each candidate's core flu, just one core flu from each candidate, put it in the voting area, so the whichever division they are, whatever it is, they can, when they enter the room, they see all the mayoral candidates up there, and they choose them whom they want, and post, you know, drop it in the ballot box, or in the box for the votes to be counted later. I said, that's very clinical, and that's where you've got away from all the people standing around the entrance. So you can just say, no more people standing at the entrance, no more how to vote cards to be handed out. People just walk straight into the polling booth. Look at all the mayoral candidates over there. They've got to vote for 2 people, the mayoral candidates and the councillors. Look at all the councillors up there. Look at the mayoral candidates, a little bio on them. Here's your pen and paper, choose whom you want from all of that, put it in the box, and you go home. That's it. So you get rid of all the spookers at the front.
I think in the future, because the governments have said this, these containment measures, this pandemic will last at least 6 months. And so there are going to be a lot of reconsiderations about how our society functions in this new paradigm, because nobody wants another pandemic. And I think it will be looked at our how to vote card tradition, because I covered the 2017 New Zealand general election, where how to vote cards promoting candidates outside of polling booths is strictly banned. So on election day in New Zealand, you walk up without anyone accosting you or anything, walk into the polling centre, get your name marked off, and cast your vote. It's completely different over there.
Wonderful. So I didn't know about that. I did not know that about New Zealand. I just suggested it to them. I said, just have the corflus, one corflus for each mayoral candidate, one for each of the lay of the councillors, council candidates. Put them up there. People just walk straight in, over and done with. But I think it's a bit too smart for them to do, because it actually requires, and it's too hard, because it requires them to pass a law in Parliament to actually change it. And, you know, as you well know, getting them to pass a law like that is rather difficult, but getting them to pass a wage increase, that's not difficult at all.
And then there's also, well, we're talking about businesses being hit because of the coronavirus. So this, obviously, it's quite a waste of paper printing all of these how to vote cards, but then you've got the knock-on effect that quick copy and snap printing and Officeworks and all those other printing places, they'd lose a lot of business election time as well.
Well, could they lose as much money as what Qantas has just lost?
Yeah, true then.
what's been ripped off, what's been written down at the stock market?
We had another crash today. We had a gain yesterday, which was completely wiped out. But I'm just saying this is how... I'm just making the point that this is how difficult change, difficult to achieve in the best of times, but certainly change in, because as I said, we're going to be thinking forward, and maybe this is one of the things we need to reconsider for the overall good.
Yeah, well, and this is a great segue for them, if to use that word. Yeah, I don't use this flippantly, but you know, it's a great segue for them to get in now and actually do something constructive given the present environment we're in. And I sent one of the ECQ guys an actual picture this morning. There were about 30 people, you know, converging on one person to hand us a How to Vote card. And I put it in writing to them. I said, that behavior is not going to change while we continue to have an environment that fosters that behavior.
Yeah, too right. And there's also been, I read that the Electoral Commission of Queensland are also looking at phone voting, and it's been talked about electronic voting for a number of years, and a lot of people are now working from home, where we're living more virtual lives now, where we're utilizing the virtual world to basically still function our economy. But in terms of electronic voting or virtual voting, we just saw in the United States with the Iowa caucuses, they used an app to tally the caucus votes, and there was all these malfunctions in it. So this is carrying out democracy is probably the ultimate challenge in this new environment.
Well, so you know, this environment actually gives us an opportunity to work towards, we've got to shift from the old way of doing it, because it doesn't work anymore.
I certainly agree that cancelling the elections is way too drastic, and democracy is far too important. I know that the UK, they've cancelled their local government elections for this year, including the London mayoral race. They've pushed them back a year. So Sadiq Khan, because of this pandemic, is going to be mayor of London for an extra year, when there would have been a lot of Londoners who would have liked to have seen him out the door via May. And obviously politicians, they're the ultimate decision makers when it comes to dealing with this pandemic and containment measures, and they still need to be held to account.
Oh, absolutely. That's the reason why when the ABC rang me today, I said, no, we're not going to put the elections back. We wanted to go ahead because the city needs the elected mayor and council for governance reasons. We need them. But we need to get them, we need to get the land sorted. Sorry, we need to get the how to vote sorted issues, that, you know, it makes it a lot more clinical for these people. They're trying various things, they're tinkering with it, but as I said to you before, Tim, they find it difficult to bring them together to pass a law, but they'll have no difficulty coming together to sign off on a wage increase. And that's the reason why they have command so little respect with the constituents and the public.
Well, Australia has never cancelled an election, even during wartime. The UK has. They cancelled, suspended all their elections during World War II. For those who are a student of history like myself, Winston Churchill was appointed Prime Minister. He didn't face an election for 5 years until after the war was complete, and actually lost that election to the Labour Party. But also the United States has never cancelled an election due to war or anything else. They still had elections
I don't think they can.
Yes.
With a presidential form of government, you cannot. There's no flexibility in that.
So they've still got their presidential primaries. There were three states which have delayed their primaries. Oh, sorry, I'll just go through the list here. This is through 538. I'm getting my exact figures a bit mixed up tonight, but Louisiana, they've delayed their primary. It was originally going to be on April 4. They've moved it back. Georgia was going to have their primary next week. It's now going to be in May. Kentucky, they've postponed all their ballots till May 19. And Maryland as well, and other states are considering following suit there. I'll just go to the CNN Election Center here. The primaries that did take place were in Illinois, Florida, and Arizona. And Joe Biden was the winner in all of those, so he is even more on track now. But good news is that Trump has now got enough delegates to bound delegates to be renominated by the Republican candidacy for president. He is main challenger, former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld, got the solitary one delegate. So that's some good news there.
Yes. Yeah, it is amazing what's going on over there. I think Trump will have Joe Biden for breakfast.
Well, it's considering that the fact that Joe Biden he doesn't seem of a sound mind either. Just look at the gaffes that he makes on a daily basis. They obviously, there's been a lot of media talking about, well, both the two viable Democrat front runners. Biden is 77, Sanders is 78. They're saying, oh, they're prone to coronavirus, but look at Joe Biden's mind as well. That's more of a concern than coronavirus. You don't want someone like that. And for all those Democrats,
he doesn't even know which state he's in at most times.
No,
that's the state of his mind, really.
For all those Democrats who mock the Republicans for nominating Trump, you're nominated a old and most likely senile man to be your nominee.
Yeah, well, yes, you can't compare. Well, I think Trump looks forward to having Biden as his opponent, because it'll be a lot easier win for him. But there's no one really who can actually come up against Trump. But we want, and we as patriots, we'd like him to be there because he's doing a sterling job.
Well, they're trying to attack him over his coronavirus response, and the U.S. government is extremely unprepared when it comes to mass testing of those infected. But that is not Trump's fault. This has been something that the federal government through the CDC and its relationship with the states has mismanaged for years and years. I mean, the good thing about our Australian response with our national cabinet, which is, that's what they've renamed COAG, is functioning very well with Scott Morrison working with all the state and territory premiers. There's five Liberal Commonwealth heads of government and four Labor, so it's an even split, but they're all working together. There's just those typical sort of partisan people on Twitter are always hashtagging Scotty from marketing, always wanting to having a go at his response, which is pretty appalling during this time. For example, I'm from Victoria. I don't think much of Daniel Andrews, but I know that his priority at the moment is to contain the spread of coronavirus.
Yeah, well, it's a difficult one for him. It's a difficult one because really it's federal government, and I would think they first need to establish who has jurisdiction over it, whether it's federal or state. I don't know. Victoria's just such a basket case, really.
Well, the way that it seems to be working at the moment is that the federal government is decreeing that these mass gatherings need to be banned, and the states, because the states ultimately have the jurisdiction for banning those mass gathering, and the state governments are basically signing off on that. So the jurisdiction functions are still working, but whatever the Prime Minister decides based on the advice of the Chief Medical Officer, the states simply sign off on, which it's functioning much better than we saw sort of during the bushfires, where there was a lot of confusion about state and federal government jurisdiction.
Well, that was because I personally hold the view that the bushfires were fueled because of a foolish policy from the Greens not to clear the forests of the dead wood.
Yeah, exactly.
So the Greens were to blame for their foolish policy, and whoever was in government to just follow on with that policy rather than addressing it.
There has also been, it's been talked about that local governments, they can also assist with, because the main thing that governments want to basically quell is the mass panic and the panic buying in the supermarkets. And I saw Jason Clare, who's a Labor backbencher, wants local government to waive their trucking and delivery restrictions on late at night. Obviously, if you're elected mayor in 2 weeks, some of these regulations, the power to continue to enforce or repeal them will lie with you and your councillors. Is that something you'd look at, is just waiving this, using this as an opportunity to get rid of that unnecessary red and also green tape to make sure that in this national emergency, local governments can waive some of their restrictions so we can get all things to people when they need and are relying on, whether it be food or medical supplies being trucked around?
Oh, it definitely would do it. That's definitely one of my strategies. I've definitely got that in my plans, because I would put it under the umbrella of efficiency. I mean, if we just put sound efficiency measures in place in Logan, we're talking significant savings that can be had from it. And we're talking about, comfortably, we're looking at about the efficiency measures that will be rolled out over the years. I don't want to put a percentage figure on it, but I know it's a lot. And I'd just like to see more of it before I actually go into actually putting a figure to it as to what it's cost the state. Mm. But would there would be the changes that would bring about would be sweeping, and that's the reason why it appears that most of my competitors have ganged up on me.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
I'm standing all alone because I'm the only one that's actually put forward an economic plan and a platform for the city. No one else has put forward a platform or a plan. No one else. They always refer to my program as it's detailed, and it's, you know, he can't. One of the most stupidest arguments being thrown up often is he cannot freeze the rates. And so my response to them is, well, neither can my competitor. He cannot raise them. Because in order to do that, he needs to have the majority of the council on side. And in order for me to do it, I need a majority of council again on side. So when this is thrown up on my Facebook page, well, you can't freeze rates, and I respond and say, you're absolutely right. I can't freeze them, and neither can my competitor raise them. Because we've got to put everything through to the council to be voted off on.
Now, as I just mentioned, it's great that even Labor politicians are on board with cutting red tape and regulation to assist during this national emergency. But what we've seen in Australia over the last year or so is that the politicians there, they're not running much. It's the bureaucracy that seems to be running the show, whether it's the Murray-Darling Basin or the National Parks Management, the Department of the Environment. And I've already talked about how local government, their planning and approval process can already take a long time. And I'm not sure how it works in Logan, but in most of Australia, the mayor and the councillors are part-time, and this is how it works in Victoria. They appoint a chief executive who works full-time to manage the council or to manage the local operations of the local government area on the councillor's behalf. And then there's numerous staff employed in the local governments and the... Both federal and state government in the last year, they've shown that they're inept in reining in bureaucrats or wanting to challenge their authority. That's obviously something you would want to challenge.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we can see what they're getting up to. They want to see whether the local government, because we've got election coming on, the local governments will be doing their absolute utmost to if not, well, it's just one of those things. We just got to wait when this comes through, when this election is through, you know, and how we just work through this.
Now, there's not just local government elections in Queensland this year. That, well, Election Day, local government, Saturday the 28th of March, there's also two by-elections in the Queensland State Assembly, but there's also a Queensland general election for the last Saturday in October. Yeah, and yes, we still might be in containment pandemic mode as well. How do you think that, obviously, as we just established, Australia hasn't cancelled an election. I don't think they will cancel this because Queensland is moving to fixed terms. How do you see the pandemic affecting the state election? Because we've already seen that the pandemic changed the sort of debate around the US presidential election. So how do you see that playing out?
I personally think we'd be over it by then.
So do I.
But my personal views, I think we're going to be over this by then. I understand Israel has found a cure for it. I have read that Israel has actually had a breakthrough in it.
They're trialing a vaccine in the United States, and there was also scientists in Singapore. They're discovering more about the virus, that it's sort of evolving into a sort of more manageable strand. So there's a lot going on with us learning more about the virus and how to fight it.
Yes, and I'm sure the company that brings that out, their share price will go right through the roof.
Well, there's, as we've already established, there's a lot of winners and losers when it comes to the economic impact of the coronavirus. There's definitely going to be more losers, but sort of one of the ultimate winners will be your old employer, Coles Supermarkets. But everyone from their CEO to their logistics managers to the store managers, you were at one stage, to the shop level workers, under incredible stress to make sure that their stock on the shelf so that normal ordinary people can just get their regular supplies, and there's not even furthermore anxiety with constant empty shelves. Obviously, if you're a store manager of a supermarket, you've got to be a good people manager and also customer relationship manager as well. And we've seen some of the appalling abuse that customers have leveled at staff, and even fights breaking out between customers. And there was also a trolley boy who was stabbed outside of Woolworths on the Mornington Peninsula yesterday. The police said it was non-panic buying related. So you've been in this position before. What can the store manager do in a situation like this? How can they, what's their sort of coping mechanism under the pressure?
Well, what they would do is there'd be a lot of literature sent out, and they'd stick it on the shelves. You know, product unavailable due to circumstances beyond our control. And there's nothing you can do because it's totally out of the control of the store manager. If the suppliers have closed their shop as well, then there's nothing they can do. It's as simple as that.
And then at the higher up more levels, I mentioned you in your biography. I'll just go.
The national bar.
Yes.
The national bar. Well, it'll be the same thing. Well, the suppliers, the suppliers putting people off because of the concerns of contamination, and he's not able to deliver. But I really think the supply chain is, let's just take something, if you've got canned beetroot or canned corn or something like stuff like that. Or okay, you've got the farmers with their wheat, just be delivering their wheat or will be delivering their wheat to the mills, where the mills are grinding it to flour. The flour then goes into the bakeries, and the bakeries are pushing the bread out. And the bakeries are doing a roaring trade with the amount of bread they're pushing out at the moment. So that cycle will just continue because the farmers are not being affected by it as such.
Overall, our food security years are pretty good because there is, as I said, the empty shelves are sending people into a lot of panic. Are you confident I'll ask you to make a prediction on the supermarkets that they can eventually get the stock levels up to at least a semi regular level where it just doesn't look empty all the time?
Well, the supermarkets are totally reliant upon the supplier, and the supplier is, as I said, if someone does canned beetroot or canned corn or the fresh chicken that comes from the farms, and as long as they continue to operate, the meat farm, the dairy industry, the meat industry, they just continue to operate as normal, and they continue to send the product through, then it just continues to flow. The supply chain will just continue. I don't think this thing will. I hold a personal view that I think it's not going to keep going on forever because something will be discovered. I keep reading stuff. There's a lot of other things going on behind it. Why all of a sudden this is just suddenly frozen and taken on the world?
Yes, well, I certainly hope that you're right. A lot of people are trying to. Obviously, none of us know how this pandemic will end, and this is what is driving a lot of the fear. It's the unknown. But I've enjoyed you sharing your insights tonight about not just your campaign, but given that we now are in a pandemic, just how that's affected democracy, and also at the end, your insights as a former senior manager for Coles.
Oh, you're welcome. It's just the supply chain. If the supply chain continues, then supply will continue. I think Quilson is the only one that comes in from Taiwan. And the rest of them are manufactured here locally, but I think they source their paper from China. I think the paper is sourced from China, and then the manufacturing takes place here. And Quilton, I know, comes from Taiwan.
I'm sure you'll agree that after this pandemic is over, supply chain and logistics managers will certainly be reconsidering outsourcing a lot of their materials from overseas, and there already is a large Buy in Australia campaign, but I think that'll start to probably sink in at some of the, not just the supermarkets, but other manufacturers of food and essential materials.
Well, that's exactly what Trump said. It's a terrific opportunity for the American market to get back on its feet now and start manufacturing in America, and it's a great opportunity for us to seize upon this as well and start manufacturing locally.
Yeah, definitely. There is often crisis emergencies are tough, but there's also opportunities to change things for the future and for the better.
And I tell you what comes out of it too, efficiency, significant measures of efficiency comes out of it.
Yeah, definitely. And well, as I said, you know all about it in business, and you're running to apply that in local government. So thank you again for your time. Good luck with the rest of the campaign, and we'll watch the Logan results on election night very closely.
Thank you, Tim. Yes, thank you for your best wishes, and let's hope it works out well for me.
Good luck.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night. So that was Paul Taylor there. Certainly insightful. He's got, his opponents are trying to demonize him for it, a large manifesto, but he's got a clear idea of what he wants to do for the city of Logan, and it is placed strategically in the greater Brisbane area. And that brings us to a very late finish for Wilms Front. It's just on 10 past 10 p.m. Melbourne time. I see that a lot of you have been quite active in the chat. If you've got a last minute question to ask myself, please tag my YouTube channel in the chat so that it highlights in red in the chat that I'm reading. Don't go anywhere after this because James Fox Higgins, he is coming up with another episode of the James Fox Higgins show at 10:30 p.m. Sydney time. The title of the show is called Sing While You're Sinking, and the description is, I've been cancelled, my whole industry grinds to a halt, but there is so much to be grateful for, so much to sing about, so let's sing. So it sounds like a musical show. James was telling me that, as he just said, he's in the music industry, but it's given him a lot of time to dedicate towards making Rational Rise TV and Champions of Light even better. So James is all set out in his bunker and in his studio, which is in a different place of his. I don't know where he lives, but it sounds like basically a compound now. So James has already told us on episodes of The Uncuckable that he's all set. So that's good to hear. I've certainly got quite a number of supplies to keep myself going. I observed a few supermarkets on my trip around the place through my various appointments. Definitely, when you move closer to the city, the shelves are much more empty. So obviously, I'm around the Frankston and Mornington Peninsula area. There's still some things in the supermarkets, but we've also seen this. I haven't seen any photo evidence of it, but there's been rumours and talk of supermarket tourists who are bussing into outer suburban, rural and regional supermarkets and stripping the place of essentials, which is not fair on the locals, especially those with low social mobility, the elderly. What is it? Neveresta said, Tim Williams, when do you get the test results? Yes. Are you saying based on my appearance on screen I have coronavirus? That is just the lighting. Obviously, the light is shining. I've got a very shiny forehead, so that's all. I feel perfectly fine. Who else has got a question here? Anxious Aussie, fever and a dry cough are the two most likely first symptoms. I'm certainly not feeling hot. Well, it was a hot day today in Melbourne. It was around about 29 degrees, so that was the only heat that I was feeling. And I don't believe that, well, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe I came across tonight with a sore throat. I just, as you know, when you're doing live presentations, your voice does get a bit rusty, but you just drink a bit of water. Even Ricky Gervais needed to drink some water every now and then while he was delivering his epic Golden Globes monologue. But as I mentioned, tomorrow night, Uncuckables will be on its traditional time slot, 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time, on its YouTube and DLive channel. And you can also check out the episode archive and podcast version at theuncuckables.com. And of course, you can check out the archive of Wilms Front episodes, a link to the podcast version of Wilms Front. Follow me on social media, my Telegram, my Gab, Minds.com account. You can get all that by going to timwilms.com and clicking on the social buttons that I have on the homepage there. The Unshackled.net has some recent new content. Obviously, as I've said before, we're focusing more on our Unshackled productions rather than the written articles on the Unshackled.net, but it's still regularly active, and you can see all our Unshackled production archive there. Whether it be Wilmsfront, the Uncuckables, Report from Tiger Mountain, Trad Tasman Talk, or Detonation with Steel Archer, which is ramping up the episodes at the moment. And well, the subs of that channel, they're actually catching up to the Tim Wilms channel as well. So Steel is sort of gloating at the moment that he's finally caught up to me. Yes. As I said, be back tomorrow night, and then of course, Trad Tasman Talk, 6 p.m. Melbourne time, Friday evening on the Unshackled YouTube channel. Myself and Douwe DeBoer will catch up on the quarantine and containment measures in Australia and New Zealand. And remember that New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, introduced the strict 14-day compulsory quarantine for those arriving from overseas on the Saturday, the day before Australia. So Jacinda Ardern actually beat us, and they're actually arresting tourists and deporting them who don't comply with the quarantine. So New Zealand is seriously cracking down on people who foreigners who are flouting the law there. As I said, we live in interesting times. Nationalism is the cure. Cutting red and green tape is also the cure as well. There are certainly ways that we can get ourselves through this crisis and make sure that our containment measures can be implemented fully, and we can get all the food and other medical supplies to those who need it. So I hope everyone in the chat, I hope that you've all got your supplies, and if you do have a family member that is affected by coronavirus, or you are forced into 14-day isolation, my best wishes. I'll continue to bring you the most accurate and up-to-date coronavirus information as I can, along with my own analysis as well. That's all from me tonight. Remember, timwilms.com, theunshackled.net, Rational Rise TV. I'll get to uploading the rest of the Wilms Front and Trad Tasman Talk archive there very soon as well. So thank you so much for your company on this later time, and I'll see you tomorrow night.
Thanks for tuning in to Wilmsfront. Visit timwilms.com or Rational Rise TV to view the archive of episodes. And keep visiting theunshackled.net to view all our shows. And to keep up with the latest real news and analysis. Thanks for tuning in to Wilmsfront. Visit timwilms.com or Rational Rise TV to view the archive of episodes. And keep visiting theunshackled.net to view all our shows. And to keep up with the latest real news and analysis.